Saying Jeremiah was a prophet seems to be a little bit of an understatement. Too commonplace, because there were all kinds of prophets, the ecstatic prophets and this prophet and people who were prophets. The word is used so much. Yes, however, Jeremiah was a prophet. This and many other statements could be said about this man. Jeremiah was both one of the great figures of Israel's history and a person that we can readily admire. You could relate to this man, admire him for his courage. He was a man of great spiritual insight, understanding, great depth, a man of perhaps super eloquence who possessed an unusual poetic gifts. Because when he gave these speeches and talks, they were usually, a lot of them were in Hebrew poetry. It had to be written down, copied down. They were spoken, they were oral. He was, in the profoundest sense of the word, a brave man. He was also a passionate man. And of course, an exceedingly human man who just captures our sympathies, perhaps like no other of the prophets in ancient times. Yeah, I suppose we could say a lot more about Jeremiah, all kinds of things about him personally, and they would probably all be true. And they might add a little bit more of our understanding of Jeremiah. If one really wants to understand Jeremiah, however, it is not as a great and gifted man, but as what he was first, last, and always, a prophet. The last time we came to chapter 7 and 8 of Jeremiah, where he gave the Temple of the Lord's sermon, he was trying to tell them, you know, that just because the temple of the Lord is here does not mean you're going to be saved. And he goes on. This is Jeremiah now, chapter 7. I want to pick it up again, verse 33. But this I commanded you. He's talking in God's first person. He's saying that God never commanded them about whole offerings and burnt offerings coming out of Egypt. But this I commanded you, obey my voice. I will be your God and you will be my people. And then he comes down, since the day, verse 25, this is chapter 7, since the day that your fathers came out of the land of Egypt until this day, I have sent you prophets saying, rising up early, sending you, and you did not listen to them. You haven't listened. It's important for people to listen. Verse 28, I said to the prophets, you shall say to them, this is the nation that did not obey the voice of the Eternal, their God, or accept correction. Truth has perished and has been off from their mouth. It's been cut off from their mouth. Truth is no longer in them. Now, none of this is poetry right now. No, none of this part is poetry. Verse 29 is poetry. Cut off your hair, cast it away, and take up lamentation on the bare heights. For the Eternal has rejected and forsaken the generation of his wrath. Now it goes back into prose. The sons of Judah have done that which is evil in my sight, declares the Eternal. They have set their detestable things in the house which is called by my name to defile it. They have built high places in Topheth, which is the valley of the son of Hinnon. The valley of Hinnon became the place where Jesus talked about as Gehenna. But what significance did that valley have? The valley where they burned their sons and their daughters in the fire. Human sacrifices were done. And it did not come into their mind, into my mind. I never wanted that. It never came into my mind for people to say, sacrifice their children. This is what God is saying through Jeremiah. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Eternal, when it will no longer be called Topheth, but the Valley of the Son of Hinnom, or the Valley of the Son of Hinnom, but it will be called the Valley of Slaughter, for they will bury in Topheth. Because there is no other place. They don't know where to put it except that valley. They'll bury the dead bodies of the people. It will be food for the birds of the sky and the beasts of the earth, and no one will frighten them away. It's the most degrading thing for a human being to die and be left out in the field for animals to eat. Then I will make to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the joy of the bridegroom and the joy of the bride. The land will become a ruin. Now, they were saying that, well, we can't go into captivity because we have the temple of the Lord. And he showed them that, no, you look what I did at Shiloh, during the time of Eli and his sons who were corrupt, and he took they removed the Ark of the Covenant from there. Chapter 8, going on with the same sermon. At that time, declares the Eternal, they will bring out the bones of the kings of Judah and the bones of the princes and the bones of the priests and the bones of the prophets and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem from their graves. They will spread them out to the sun and the moon and all the hosts of heaven, which they have loved and which they have served. They serve these hosts of heaven, these stars and so on, and the demons, and which they have gone after, and which they have sought, and which they have worshipped. They will not be gathered or buried. They will be as dung on the ground. That's God's position regarding Judah at that time. And death will be chosen rather than life by all the remnant that remain of this evil family that remains in all the places in which I have driven them, declares the Eternal of Hosts. For you shall say to them, now this is Hebrew poetry, you shall say to them, thus says the Eternal, the men fall and not get up again. Okay? They fall, they won't get up again. Does one turn away and not repent? Why then has this people, Jerusalem, turned away in continual apostasy? You can't figure it out. They're my people. They turn away constantly. They hold fast to deceit. They refuse to return. Verse 6, I have listened and heard, and I have spoken what is right. No man repented of his wickedness, saying, what have I done? Everyone turned to his course like a horse charging into the battle. Even the stork in the sky knows her seasons, and the turtle dove and the swift thrush observe the time of their migrations, but my people do not know. They don't know the ordinances of the Eternal. They don't seem to know what I want. I gave them the law. Now you'll see how chapter 7 and 8 are parallel in many ways to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28, what's going to happen to you? Chapter 8 and verse 8, how can you say we are wise and the law of the Eternal is with us? But behold, the lying pen of the scribes has made it into a lie. Oh, the law of God's with us, we're okay. The wise men are put to shame. They are dismayed and caught. Behold, they have rejected the word They have rejected the word. They don't hear it. They don't read it of the eternal. And what kind of wisdom do they have, these wise people? Here's Jeremiah. He's talking to these people. You can imagine what courage it takes at the temple. He's at the temple talking to priests, talking to the religious leaders. Meanwhile, they were still having their temple sacrifices every day. So we're good. We're good. They had a lot of rituals. They had a lot of rituals that seemed to be right. And they thought, we're good because we do it. Verse 10, chapter 8, verse 10. Therefore, I will give their wives to others, their fields to new owners, because from the least, listen to this indictment, from the least even to the greatest, everyone is greedy for gain. From prophet even to priest, everyone practices deceit. They just lie. They lie, they lie, they deceive, they lie, they try to, and they may not lie directly, but they lie indirectly, they deceive. They heal the brokenness of the daughter of my people superficially, saying, peace, peace, shalom, shalom. You're going to have good things, health, prosperity, shalom, and health, prosperity, blessings, peace, good long life, and so on. But there is no peace. Were they ashamed because of the abominations they have done? They certainly were not. This is all in Hebrew poetry now. They certainly were not ashamed. They did not know how to blush. Therefore, they shall fall among those who fall. At the time of their punishment, they shall be brought down. I will surely snatch them away, declares the Eternal. There will be no grapes on the vine, no figs on the fig tree. And what I have given them will pass away. Why are we sitting still? Assemble yourselves and let us go into the fortified cities and let us perish there, because the Eternal, our God, has doomed us and has given us poisoned water to drink, for we have sinned against the Eternal, the YHWH or YHVH. We waited for peace, but no good came. For a time of healing, but behold, terror. From Dan is heard the snorting of his horses at the sound of the neighing of his stallions. The whole land quakes, for they come and devour the land in fulfillment, the city and its, in fullness rather, the city and its inheritance. I'm sending serpents against you, adders from there. There is no charm. They will bite you, declares the Eternal. My sorrow is beyond healing. My heart is faint within me. Behold, listen, the cry of the daughter of my people from a distant land. Is the Eternal not in Zion? Is her king not within her? Why have they provoked me with such graven images, with foreign idols? Harvest is past, summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the brokenness of the daughter of my people, I am broken. I mourn. Dismay has taken hold of me. Now, these are from God, but I'm sure they reflect Jeremiah. Is there no balm? A balm, you know, some healing. Where do I look? It's not in Jerusalem. Where am I going to get this healing from for our country? It's not in Jerusalem. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then has not the health of my daughter, of the daughter of my people, been restored? Chapter 7 and 8 of this powerful book of Jeremiah. Now, let me tell you what was happening. It's very parallel. I don't want to take the time to read all of chapter 28 of Deuteronomy. You can do that. You'll see what God is saying here. And it's very powerful. Let me show you what was taking place. I'm going to read from the historical part of 2 Kings chapter 23. I'm going to begin in verse 31, and you'll see what was taking place. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned only 3 months in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. There are several Jeremiahs. People will name their kids Jeremiah, but she was from a different place, not the same. In these 3 months, the Bible says about him in verse 32. This is Jeremiah. This is 2 Kings 23, verse 32. He did evil in the sight of the Eternal, the YHWH, or YHVH, according to all that his fathers had done. Fathers, forefathers, all the people that went before him. Now it says in verse 33, Pharaoh Necho imprisoned him at Ribiah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem. So even already, Judah was so weak that here came the Pharaoh from Egypt. He grabs the king of Israel, who was just young, okay? He was 23 years old. He grabs him, takes him out, imprisons him down in a part of Egypt, and he was not allowed to reign. And he imposed, now he doesn't want him reigning in Jerusalem. He imposed, now here's the Pharaoh. What does the Pharaoh do? Imposed, this verse 32, last part of verse 33 now. He imposed on the land a fine of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. Now they have to come up with this fine, okay? I want every year, I want, or every month, I don't know how often it was. It says he imposed on the land in Jerusalem, on the land, a fine of 100 talents of silver and a talents of gold. Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, the king in place of Josiah, his father. So he took this other guy out, Jehoahaz. He's out. Eliakim became the king, but the Pharaoh changed his name to Jehoiakim. But he took Jehoahaz away, brought him to Egypt, and that's where he died, that 23-year-old guy. I guess they abused him or didn't feed him right. He died in Egypt. So Jehoiakim became the king, and you'll see in verse 35 what he did. Jehoiakim gave silver and gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land in order to give the money at the command of Pharaoh. Why you tax the land? He exacted silver and gold from the people of the land, each according to his valuation to give to Pharaoh Necho. Let's say you had 10 acres. Your father gave you 10 acres. You have the, well, I'm going to tax that land. I'm going to tax that land a certain amount. You're going to pay for having this kind of land that your father gave you. And we have to tax that so I can give money to Pharaoh Necho. I don't give my own money. I don't give the king's money. I don't give the money that I'm going to use to build my house. So Jehoiakim, he exacted the silver and gold from the people of the land, each according to the valuation, to give it to Pharaoh Necho. In verse 38, this is 2 Kings 23, verse 36 now. Jehoiakim was 25 years old, when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Zebida, and the daughter of the Pedaiah of Ruma. He did evil in the sight of the Eternal according to all that his forefathers had done. Now, Jeremiah has an ongoing battle with this king. Ongoing. He taxes the people. He's got plenty of money in his own treasury, but he taxes the people. You'll see, he's building a house. Now, what Jehoiakim decided to do, I'm going to build a house. He's taxing all the people. They can't afford anything. They're taxing the land of the people and so on. But I'm going to build me a house. And he builds a house. And Jeremiah writes to him about that house. And he's saying this. Jeremiah chapter 22, verse 13. Now, dropping down to verse 13. Woe to him who builds his house without righteousness. I'm going to build a house, but you don't have righteousness. And his upper rooms without justice. Who uses, sending this message now, he's sending it to Jehoiakim, who uses his neighbor's services without pay and does not give him his wages. Listen to what these kings thought they could do. Who says, verse 14, I will build myself a roomy house with spacious upper rooms. Who cuts out its windows, paneling it with cedar, and painting it bright red. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, okay? Painting it bright red. And then he makes a very sarcastic statement to Jehoiakim. Do you become a king because you are competing in cedar? Did not your father, this is Josiah. Now, Josiah started as a young king. He reigned 31 years. He died at age 39. He started reigning at 8. But he died, got killed in a battle. Did not your father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? He had enough to eat and drink. He was fine. He was doing fine, but he did righteousness. He did justice. Then it was well with him. He pled the cause of the afflicted and the needy. Okay? Then it was well. Is not that what it means to know me, declares the Eternal? To plead the cause of the afflicted and the needy, isn't that what it means to know me? If you want to know what it means to know me. But your eyes and your heart are intent only upon your own dishonest gain. And he says dishonest. You're taxing people who don't need to be taxed, and you're taking the money from them. You're only wanting your You know how many politicians, why does a politician spend $500,000, $1 million on a campaign for a seat in Congress that only pays maybe $120,000 a year? Well, why? Why do you spend that kind of money? Why would you spend? Why do presidents spend? Why do senators spend enormous amount trying to gather, please send me money so I can have this seat? Why? You have to ask yourself. Yeah, you're focused only on your dishonest gain and on the shedding of innocent blood and on practicing oppression and extortion. There were his sins. He didn't care about the needy. He didn't care about his people. I'm just going to do what I want. Jeremiah chapter 22 and verses 15 and 16. I'm going to read this now from the New English Translation. Does it make you any more a king that you outstrip everyone else in building with cedar? Just think about your father. He was content that he had food and drink. He did what was just and right, so things went well with him. He upheld the cause of the poor and the needy, so things went well for Judah, his country. The Eternal says, that is a good example of what it means to know me. Josiah knew God, but Jehoiakim did not. Now, throughout the book of Jeremiah, there are chapters in which Jeremiah has laments. They're laments or their confessions. They're Jeremiah's talk. Talk to God, talk to himself, in which he is going on about his personal issues, okay? Chapters 11, 12, 15, 17, 18, and 20 all have, at some point in them, a lament. I'll read you a portion of the laments. Here is chapter 11 of Jeremiah, verses 18 through 23. Moreover, the Eternal made it known to me, and I knew it. Then you showed me their deeds. But I was like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter. You know, I was just naive, innocent. And I did not know that they had devised plots against me, plots, schemes against me, saying, let us destroy the tree with its fruit. Let us cut him off from the land of the living, that his name be remembered no more. I mean, I thought I was just preaching the word of God. I thought people would accept what I had. I have a word from the Eternal. Here it is. Oh, no. Oh, no. They're mad at me. But, O Eternal of hosts, who judges righteously, who tries the feelings and the heart, let me see your vengeance on them, for to you I have committed my cause. Therefore, thus says the Eternal concerning the men of Anathoth. Now, these are people in his own hometown who, and this is God now saying this to the man of Anathoth, and God is talking to Jeremiah. Thus says the Eternal concerning the men of Anathoth who seek your life. And they are saying to Jeremiah, don't prophesy in the name of the Eternal of the YHVH. Don't do that. So that you will not die at our hand. Our hand. His own people in his own little town of Anathoth, probably a lot of relatives, want to kill him. Verse 22, this is chapter 11 of Jeremiah. Therefore, thus says the Eternal of hosts, behold, I am about to punish them. The young men will die by the sword. Their sons and daughters will die by famine, and a remnant will not be left to them. For I will bring disaster on the men of Anathoth. It will be the year of their punishment. Now, his own people, and in some cases, his own family members wanted to kill him. Why? You have to question, why? Why? Well, let me give you a little bit of an analogy. Let's suppose we had you and you got a word from God and you are supposed to go and tell the leaders of this country, the leaders of your society, that their religions have not been good, all their masses and their Sunday worship or their Sabbath worship or any other worship, and their little songs and their hymns and their little things and their prayers and are not going to save them. They're not going to save them because there's no justice and they're extorting from the people. Now suppose you had that job and now you're going to tell them there's this big country over here. It's coming at us. It's going to come and get us, and it's going to take us over. And guess what it is? It's China. Let's just pretend you're going to say something similar to that. And you say, and we have to, now we have only two choices, surrender or be taken care of. They're going to come in one way or the other. Don't think we're going to be, just because we have this and we have that constitution and we have the Bill of Rights and we have, don't think that's going to save us. It's not going to do it. God has already set his punishment in place. How many people do you think are going to like you? They're going to like you. You know, what do we say to ourselves in America? We are the greatest country in the world. We're the most righteous. We're the most wonderful, giving. We're the most loving. We're the most that we have. Don't we all say that? We all say it. We say it all the time. I believe it too. But suppose somebody came and said, well, you're not. People are being gypped out of their money. The taxes are too much. The politicians don't care. The priests and they don't tell you what's wrong with the country. They just like to go on with their own things. Here's another lament in Jeremiah chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Righteous are you, O eternal. When I say use the word eternal, I'm using it in place of the Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh, the YHVH of the Hebrew letters, because that's what that word is. Righteous are you, O eternal, that I would plead my case with you. I want to plead my case. Indeed, I would discuss matters of justice with you. Why has the way of the wicked prospered? I mean, here's Jeremiah chapter 12. Why are these people who cheat and lie, they're living doing good? Why are all those who deal in treachery at ease? You have planted them. They have also taken root. They grow. They have even produced fruit. You are near to their lips, but far from their mind, their heart, their mind. But you know me, O Eternal. You see me. You examine my heart, my attitude toward you. I want you to drag them off like sheep to the slaughter and set them apart for a day of carnage. He's upset. Everybody's making fun of him, laughs at him, and doesn't believe his word, and they're just prosperous. They're just going on. Chapter 15 of Jeremiah. This is another lament from Paul, from Jeremiah. You know, O Eternal, you who know, O Eternal, remember me. Take notice of me. Take vengeance for me on my persecutors. Did he have persecutors? You bet. Lots of them. Take vengeance on my persecutors. Do not, in view of your patience. He knows God is patient. What does it say about God? God who is loving and kind and patient, and merciful and forgiving. Do not, in view of your patience, take me away. Let them kill me. Know that for your sake I endure reproach. I do it for you. Your words are found, and I ate them. Remember what, the beginning there? You shoved these words in me. And your words became for me a joy and a delight of my heart, for I have been called by your name. O Eternal God of hosts, I do not sit in the circle of merrymakers, nor do I exalt. Because of your hand upon me, I sat alone, for you filled me with indignation. Why has my pain been perpetual and my wound incurable, refusing to be healed? Will you indeed be to me like a deceptive stream, like water that is unreliable? It's not really wet. It's not really good. It doesn't taste good. Now, Jeremiah was arrested time and again, okay? He really was. He was arrested. He was beat up. He was thrown in stocks and dungeons and so on. Look at Jeremiah chapter 20, and I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to read in verse 1, and then I'm going to drop down to 11 through 13, okay? When Pashur the priest, the son of Immer, who was chief officer of the house of the Eternal, he's a chief officer, he was the guy running the house, the temple of God. When he heard Jeremiah prophesying these things. Now, what was Jeremiah prophesying? The king of Babylon is going to come. The king of Babylon is going to come, and there's only one way for us to save ourselves. It's too late. You know, you read chapter 7, and in the first part of chapter 7, you'll say, well, it sounds like they could still repent. But by the end of it, no. God has already made up his mind. And by the time you get to chapter 20, no. God has already made up his mind. There is no thing you can do. There are two things you can do, only two. One, you can fight against the king of Babylon, and he'll just bludgeon you and kill you and kill your kids and kill the families and destroy everything. Or you can surrender to the king of Babylon and save your life and go off. But you are not going to stay in this land. God has already decreed it. You're leaving. You're going to get out. That's what Jeremiah is preaching, okay? So when Pashur the priest, the son of Imner, who was chief officer, heard what Jeremiah was preaching. Now, what was he preaching? Let's go to chapter 19 for just a second. I'm going to read a few verses. Jeremiah 19, verse 13. I will make them eat flesh, the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters. They will eat one another's flesh in the siege and in the distress with which their enemies, then those who seek their life will distress them. Then you are to break the jar in the sight of the men who accompany you and say to them, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, so will I break this people and this city, even as one breaks a potter's vessel. You know, you just smash it, which cannot again be repaired. And they will bury in Topheth because there is no other place for burial. This is how I will treat this place and its inhabitants, declares the YHVH. So as to make this city like Topheth, the valley of Hinnom. The houses of Jerusalem, the houses of the kings of Judah will be defiled like the place of Topheth because of all the houses on whose rooftops they burned sacrifices to all the heavenly hosts and poured out drink offerings to other gods. I mean, God is fed up. So now, this Pashur, he comes in, he hears all that what Jeremiah just said, and notice what he does in verse 2. Pashur had Jeremiah the prophet beaten and put him in stocks that were at the upper Benjamin gate, which was by the house of the Eternal. Put him in stocks. You say these things, this is what you're going to get, Jeremiah. You're going to go in a stock. Now, what is a stock? Not only was he thrown in stocks, he was thrown in dungeons. He was placed in jails in a little cell. Now, the stocks, they bind you. They put you in a thing and you can't move, straps and things, and you're just hurt. Hurt. If you remember John McCain, they hung him by his shoulders and the arms like this until his shoulder joints just pulled out and he could never get it back. So when you reached out to shake hands with John McCain, he couldn't shake. He would just hand you one left hand, I think, with that, his arms and shoulders. He couldn't lift his shoulders above his arms above his shoulders any further. Yeah. In the stocks. And you see in Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 26 and 27, he prophesies to put him in stocks in an iron collar. Now then, why have you not rebuked Jeremiah of Anathoth who prophesied to you? Why don't you rebuke him? Why don't you put him in stocks? Why don't you put him in jail? Why don't you do all these things? The most common term rendered stock means a device for keeping a prisoner in a crooked position, confined. They were confined there in this crooked position. Jeremiah was not only put in stocks, he was not only beaten, but you see in Jeremiah chapter 37, Jeremiah had come into the dungeon, that is, the vaulted cell. Now, they put him in a room. The dungeon is like a jail cell. That's it. It's called a dungeon for some reason, and it translated that in several translations. But in Jeremiah chapter 38, verse 6, then they took Jeremiah from that cell, and they cast him into the cistern. You have to read this in a better translation than the King James to show you that it's a cistern. You know what a cistern is? It's a piece of land cut out in order to hold water. So they throw him into the cistern of the Makajiah, the king's son. The king's son had a cistern. We have to keep water. You know, one of the troubles in Southern California is we don't know how to keep any water. All the water just runs off. We have wells. We hope it gets down in there. Pasadena has a number of wonderful wells, but we don't have a way of keeping water because we're afraid of floods more than we're afraid of drought. We're afraid that the water will just go everywhere and wipe out things. So we have the fastest way possible. We have these, I don't know what we call them, ways in order to drain out water out of here and get it to the ocean as fast as possible. We don't try to keep it. We have drains. They took Jeremiah and they put him in a cistern then. And the king's house, which was in the court of the guardhouse, this is Jeremiah 38, verse 6, and they let Jeremiah down with ropes. Now, in the cistern, there was no water, okay? It wasn't filled with water. They used a lot of the water up. It must have been summertime, you know, and there was no water, but only mud. And Jeremiah sank into the mud. Jeremiah 38, verse 7. But Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian eunuch, while he was in the king's palace, heard that they had put Jeremiah into the cistern. Now the king was sitting in the gate of Benjamin, and in verse 9, he comes to the king and he says, "My lord the king, these men have acted wickedly in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the cistern, and he will die right there, right where he is, because of the famine. He's got nothing to eat. He's down in this mud, for there is no more bread in the city. We can't give him anything. He's down in." Then the king commanded Ebed, the Ethiopian, saying, "Take 30 men from here under your authority and bring Jeremiah up from the cistern before he dies." So in verse 11, here's what they did. Verses 11, 12, and 13. So Ebed-Melech took the men under his authority. They went into the king's palace to a place beneath the storeroom, and they took from there worn out clothes, worn out rags, and they let them down by ropes into the cistern to Jeremiah. And he said to Jeremiah, "Put these worn out robes, things under your arms, okay? Put them under your armpits and under the ropes. We're going to let down the ropes." Because, you know, if you're being hauled up a huge, a man and being put there, it's going to burn you, tear your skin and everything. These ropes were not necessarily made with satin. So put these cloths under here, then put the rope over that. We're going to haul you up. So now put these clothes and rags under your armpits and the ropes. And Jeremiah did so. So they pulled Jeremiah up with the ropes and lifted him up out of the cistern. Then Jeremiah stayed in the court of the guardhouse. What did this man have to put up with? Could you have done it? I asked myself, could I have done it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I could have done. I don't know. Not many people were chosen for this job. He was. And we'll talk more about one of his great laments in our next sermon. Please join me next week. Now we will ask God closing prayer for our services, and then you can stay tuned for the hymn following. Our Father in heaven, We are so grateful that there are some people so dedicated to you, so committed to your word, that it didn't matter what people did. They said the same thing. And even after Jeremiah was taken out of that pit, he got an audience with Zedekiah. And Zedekiah wanted to know what was the next thing. And Jeremiah gave him the same message. Surrender to the king of Babylon or be killed. He was faithful to that message. And in the end, everything happened exactly as you prophesied by him. Our only salvation, Father, is righteousness and truth. Listening to your word, living a life that is righteous and dedicated to you. That's our only saving thing. We can't depend on rituals. We can't depend on who we are, what country we come from, or what nationality we are, or anything else. We can only depend on doing your will, being righteous, being upright, being fair, being honest, being truthful, being loving, being kind, all the things. And we give you praise, we give you honor and glory now, because we have a wonderful example set by Jeremiah, and so close to being like Jesus Christ, your son. Those examples we hold in our heart every day. We ask your blessing on your people everywhere. We thank you for your mercies every day. And we do it all in the name of your son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.